WildTalkRadio.com.
One show down, which means one more to go. This is Seabrew Not So Live. Live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. We're here to review AEW's Double or Nothing, which took place last night, live on pay-per-view. And boy howdy, was it an overbooked mess. So, joining me, the producer, Sir Rockin, is one and only the intern, King Kittens.
Okay, I would just like to announce that, Double or Nothing has just ended after a grueling 4.5 hours. We have finally reached the end. We have not reached the pinnacle, but the end of the show.
The pinnacle is no more. Remember that.
That
ended. That, in fact.
Oh, good. Hopefully the show ends. I'm sorry. It was long. And not great at times.
We'll talk about it, but it didn't feel like the longest pay-per-view they've ever done. It was just the most overbooked pay-per-view.
In a few matches, yes.
Yeah. To give us some real expert insight is the one and only Keishi Matsunaga.
What?
You're the expert. You've been in the ring.
Fair enough.
You know the thing.
I mean, I expected it to go longer, so I was actually surprised.
Surprised with how
pay-per-view.
Yeah, it didn't feel as long.
I didn't think that it felt long, but also like looking at the time, I was like, okay, it was kind of what I expect. It was shorter than I really expected based on other ones that I've watched.
But boy, how the first. I want to say 2.5 hours of this show. Everything
it
just
was
overbooked.
It was a slow start.
Slow.
But they found their way.
They
found their way.
Props to the main eventers for finding their way at the end.
Yeah, the two end matches I think did a lot for this show, but holy shit, that front end.
So we open on the buy-in.
We need to talk about this buy-in.
Is it still the buy-in? I don't remember if they've changed the name of it.
0 hour buy-in, whatever the hell they're calling it now.
It was
the one hour free preview on YouTube.
Yeah, that's another name for it. Yeah.
Before we get into the actual match, I messaged Rock about this. So there are a few legends, we'll call them, who left a certain company because they still felt that they had gas in the tank and they wanted to be able to compete and all of that stuff. One of them is relegated to announcing on a pre-show, and the other, I have no clue what the hell he's doing anymore, aside from working on Busted Open.
Show Paul?
Yeah, Show Paul is one of them.
Show Paul White? Yeah.
And Mark Henry, I mean, who's been narrowed down to a cliched phrase, and never set foot in a ring.
Yeah, well, he's a coach.
I mean,
he's a coach.
Are we like really mad at that?
No.
No, I'm not mad at it. It's just it was funny that they left and their entire reason for leaving was just I still have stuff to prove. I can still go in the ring. You know, I don't want to be relegated to these storylines of like helping advance other people, and that's all they're doing.
Oh, I thought Mark Henry left just cuz he got treated like garbage at the anniversary show.
Was that the reason?
I don't know because I don't really dirt cheat that much. I just know that the last time you saw him on like WWE TV, someone was insulting him when he had like a broken ankle and he was rolling away like Lou Ferrigno Hulk TV show David Bruce Banner hitchhiking down the road with the sad piano playing behind him.
That would be one legend killer, Randy Orton, before you know he found Matt Riddle.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the last thing that they did. They had Mark Henry do, and I think he wasn't like super impressed with it, which is why he decided to leave. I know Big Show for sure wanted to keep wrestling.
Yeah,
which, I mean, okay, but, you know.
Sometimes WWE knows best, and I think they figured it out.
Well, and I mean, maybe Paul figured it out too, just, you know, a little bit later than...
No, because he still wants to get back in there.
He still wants to be Captain Insano.
I mean, yeah.
Captain Insano in 2023, yep. That's going to work.
I'd watch a clip of it from Rampage.
I think we already had the clip once, and, well, here we are. Anyway, for the first time since 2019, they're at ringside for announcing the show. And I don't think any of them liked it.
JR was pissed. JR had a mad the entire show.
Not the entire show, just until Tony Schiavone showed up and took over for him. Probably because JR was like, why are we here? I'm leaving.
JR was that Simpsons meme of Angry Man Yells at Cloud this entire show.
I think it was in the Jericho match. He just started yelling stupid at somebody.
Like, my favorite part was he didn't even get the ramp intro. If you noticed, he came from the side of the ramp. Like, JR has been relegated to not even getting a ramp intro.
Well, to be fair, he never had to walk down the ramp because it was always on the stage. So he hasn't walked down a ramp in ages.
There's no telling what might happen.
That's true.
So
I mean, I thought Daz took it in stride.
for a while, and then he started having panic attacks as things kept breaking in front of him. Especially when the main event came up and everyone just pushing the desk at him, and he just sort of had enough.
I don't know what's going on. All the monitors are gone. I can only see what's in front of my face.
Because, you know, you just can't look straight at the ring. You got to make sure you're looking at the monitors. But
well, no, you got to give him...
No doubt about it, Schiavone.
Whoa. Like, no offense to Taz. He's not the tallest guy. He may not be able to see.
Taz is on the shorter side.
That's coming from someone who is also not the tallest person. Who knows? I would have maybe had to stand on a chair in order to commentate from that angle.
And especially the match where you needed monitors, you didn't have a monitor.
Exactly.
Because boy, Holly, they struggled.
They needed monitors. They needed a director.
We'll get to that one. But the pre-show, the kickoff, the buy-in, the 0 hour, whatever you want to call it, had Ethan Page and the Guns taking on Matt and Jeff Hardy, the Hardy Boys, and Hook. Good to see the Guns splitting the HBK gear. One got the top, one got the bottoms.
What the hell was Austin wearing on his face?
You see, what had happened was in Vegas, he just sort of got stuff put on his face.
I understand. Look, I've seen The Hangover. I know that when you go in Vegas, you end up with something either tattooed or painted on your face. But it was really awkward because when they did that 360 camera thing around them as part of the intro. And when I first saw Austin, I was like, does he have a black eye? Like, what? Or like, was he trying to do like a Malachi Black thing? And then they went to Colton, and Colton just has, you know, the man star buns on the top of his head. And I was like, okay, no, he doesn't have anything. And then when Austin got to the ring, it's like, oh, he just kind of sort of painted blue on his foot. What the hell?
He went for a look. That's the best way to describe it. He went for a look. This match was a struggle to watch.
Parts of it were definitely a struggle.
This was Jeff Hardy's first match back after suspension, and they put it on pay-per-view. And I would just like to say, Jeff Hardy, you really need to consider possibly not performing anymore.
I always thought that Matt would be the one who would have to dial it back towards the end first because of, like, how interesting it is to watch him get up from the mat.
Yeah, because Matt's knees are shot.
Oh, man, are they ever. And, I mean, good for him for keeping going. And also, like, you can tell that Matt is like, okay, I know my limits. I'm going to make adjustments to my moveset to make it so that my limits aren't pushed as far as I need them to, as I want them to be.
Yeah.
Like, he's being pretty conservative. Jeff, on the other hand, in this match, he was trying to do everything.
Yeah, and I will say this. Part of it is the fact that Jeff got hurt legitimately. It looked like he screwed up his ankle.
Yeah, well, and they even said, I think they said in the promo after that his ankle was hurt.
Well, you could see when he tried to do the one thing and his leg gave out.
Yeah.
And he gets up and he's kind of limping.
You mean he did Whisper in the Wind?
When he attempted the Whisper in the Wind.
No, it was before that.
Oh, you're talking about before that.
No, I mean that's when he tripped up, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was tripping. No, it was.
It wasn't Whisper in the Wind because he turned that into a splash.
No, because
he tried to go up on the ropes and he bailed hard.
Yeah. Well, he got hurt before that.
Yeah,
he limped over to the corner to try and do.
No, that's the difference. But no, that Whisper in the Wind is when he tries to do the backflip. That's Whisper in the Wind.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What's the one where he tries to jump off of Matt as well?
I don't know the name, but that's not.
Oh,
the move.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So
but it's he tried a move before.
Yeah,
and then he got screwed up.
Instead of doing like the leg thing, he just did a splash because he was
But
when he tried to do the little twisting backflip, he missed.
Oh, he ate shit on that rope.
Here's the thing. Hold on.
I mean,
that was planned.
I was gonna say because like when he fell, the way he did it, I was like how he grabbed the top rope and kind of like twisted as he came down. I'm like, I feel like he did that on purpose.
He did. He in fact did that on purpose, and that got everyone worried because everyone thought it was a real fuck up. It wasn't. It was a planned fuck up.
Yeah. No, it
makes
like,
which makes it because, worse because it doesn't need
hurt,
it.
Because he legitimately hurt his ankle, I was like 60-40.
But he didn't need it to fuck that up.
No.
He could have just hit the move and everyone would have been fine. You didn't need to look like an idiot. Screw up the move and then screw up your ankle and then just lay on the corner making everyone worried that you actually got screwed up. Because that's what happened. But that's Jeff Hardy. Because he shouldn't be...
here's the problem. This is why Jeff and Darby are problematic. When your entire career is based on doing the crazy high spot.
Yeah.
Everyone expects it, and you have to keep upping your game, which is why you've had someone like Jeff doing, you know, swantons off of incredibly high ladders onto people through chairs, and then, you know, ends up on painkillers. This is why Darby Allin gets legitimately thrown down concrete steps and then is gone for 3 weeks because he needs to recuperate.
Mm-hmm.
You get to a point where it's like you do these kinds of things and your body just can't take it anymore so that when you try to do it, it just gives out. And that's where Jeff is now at 40-something years old.
And someone who hasn't wrestled in a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that also doesn't help. But it's also like AEW has, with the WWE, they tried to rein him in a little bit. They tried to like give him safer spots, I want to say, to do. It feels like AEW realized Jeff was on a like limited clock and was just like, do whatever the hell you want to, be as crazy as you want, because we've only got you for probably about 2 years. Go.
I don't even know if 2 years is.
I mean, he just spent the first year of it on the sideline.
Right,
so.
You know what I mean, though. It's like, we're going to get our money's worth and let you be as stupid as you want to be.
Yeah.
And it's not helpful.
So Matt, Jeff, and Hook got the win. The match was what it was. Ethan Page.
I appreciated Hook's work.
Hook was good. Hook was fine. Hook was,
like, especially like as someone, like the way that they initially pushed Hook as a guy who just kind of like kicked the crap out of people. It was nice to see him take a little bit of offense and show that he could like take some heat.
So we're finally seeing growth from Hook.
Yes. So that was cool.
Mm-hmm. We're also unfortunately seeing a continuance of the Hardy firm feud.
Which, again, as we said on Saturday in our short preview, I thought with deletion it was the end. But
look at the Elite and the BCC. You have essentially started their feud with a blow-off match.
I mean, a little bit, but, you know. Here we are. So, Ethan Page now under contract to Matt Hardy for whatever reason. So, comedy incoming on Collision or Dynamite or Rampage, most likely Rampage.
I'm looking forward to it.
It should be fine.
Yeah. I mean, I like Ethan Page, and I think they're going to do some fun stuff.
As our resident Canadian on the show.
Half Canadian as well.
Martha Hart came out for the opening ceremonies up there for the Owen. Did she actually tell us anything other than Tony had a fedora?
We got the Martha Hart, you know, ego stroke is what I called this.
Ouch. Insults from the chat on my citizenship.
Yeah, we allow Canadians here, yes.
I'm not going to lie. I might have skipped that part.
Now, Cage, How does it feel that the Owen finale is going to be done at the Stampede?
I mean, they announced that long before when it was the House Rules.
Yes, the cover-up House Rules match, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like, hearing that, I was like, oh, that's cool. And in the back of my head, I'm like, I feel like it's kind of weird that they're doing the finals at a non-televised event, even if it is in Calgary. So
yeah.
Once the thing that came out was like, oh, we're going to start doing collision tapings. As soon as they said that, I'm like, oh, so this House Rules is going to turn into a collision taping. That's cool.
Made more sense that way.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, if you're a wrestling company and you have anything to do with the Hearts, doing something in Calgary makes sense.
Apparently Tony wants to get Jushin Thunder Liger in for the show.
Oh my gosh.
He's retired.
Just to be there.
Well, yeah,
just
but he could do like an appearance.
Yeah.
Come out in a suit with his giant mask, do his like two-hand wave, go play with a corgi somewhere.
I like the oddly specific play with a corgi.
Have you not seen that video?
No.
There's a video floating around the internet of Jushin Thunder Liger, like in like full, like get like basically like 10 seconds away from like doing his entrance with his cape and stuff. And he's just sitting on the floor in some room playing with a corgi. It's amazing.
He's going to look it up now. I can hear.
Yeah, I heard. I heard some tippy tapping. And no, Chad, I'm not trying to get booked. There are younger, way better talent here that should be getting booked over me.
There you go. So everyone got booked for the 21-man Blackjack Battle Royale. For the
Their entrances took 15 minutes!
For the AEW European title, I mean the international title. Thank you, JR.
JR was on something.
It
is international.
It is international. It's something. Yeah. So you had Jay White, Juice Robinson, Keith Lee, Dustin Rhodes, Ricky Starks, Brian Cage, Swerve Strickland, Penta, El Zero, Miro, whatever. Ray Phoenix, whatever. Kip Sabian.
Miro wasn't in the
Not Miro, because he's coming on Saturdays. Trent Beretta, Chuck Taylor, Tony's, Ari Daivari, Big Bill, Lee Moriarty, Commander Bandito, The Butcher, and of course, The Blade taking on Orange Cassidy for the championships.
Can we just... I know he's kind of crazy old guy. At ringside.
Yeah.
JR is getting a little racist.
Which part?
The fact where he basically said, oh, all those luchadors are related to one another.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It was like, oh, JR, no. No, you...
Yeah, he said it. He said it. Yeah,
because it was the spot where they were all covering Bandito while he was holding Tony Nese up, and it was, you know, oh, they're all working together. Yeah, well, they're all, you know, probably related to one another. Oh, God.
Oh, JR.
Yeah, that's where you just look at that and you're just like, oh, no. And then, you know, it doesn't help when they had someone else later on in the show that has made other comments in the past.
So, Cage, have you been in Battle Royals before?
Yep.
Do you always start in the ring, or do you start just standing around there around ringside for 5 minutes?
It depends on the battle royal. Sometimes,
well, I mean...
sometimes we all start in the ring. Sometimes we come out to the ring individually, a la Royal Rumble. I've never
stood around
done
ringside.
One where the champion. Well, I've also never been in a battle royal where the champion starts in the ring first. And it's for a championship, and then everybody goes in.
But everyone didn't go in. Some of them just...
It was half.
Half.
And well, yeah.
You didn't know who was legal.
I mean, yeah, but lots of time. I mean, not to the extreme circumstances that they did in this Battle Royal. But there have always been people who come out to Royal Rumbles and Battle Royals that run out and don't get in the ring right away.
Yeah,
so,
one or
I
two.
Mean, it wasn't,
not ten.
It wasn't super, like, They did a decent job explaining why everybody didn't get in the ring right away. A lot of the people who didn't get in the ring right away were heels, so that kind of makes sense. Especially guys like Swerve waiting to pick their spot.
It just seemed like, cool, it's effective if one or two people do it. But ten people were... It was a lot.
It was a bit overkill, for sure.
So here's how I summed up the Battle Royal. Standing around, flip, 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 high dive, roll, 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 super kick, super kick, super kick, dive, roll, super kick, dive, roll, super kick.
You missed adding some eliminations in there.
Did I?
Stalling suplex.
Stalling suplex. Because that's what felt like a majority of the Battle Royal was. once. For
I mean, the other nice thing about not everybody getting in all at once is like it gave some room for some bigger spots than having everybody just walking around punching and kicking each other and trying to make sure they stay out of the way of people trying to get whatever spots in that they had planned.
I get what you're saying.
Oh, hold on, yeah. Brent, and give the people what they want. Forgot about
yes.
That. They gotta give the people what they want.
Which was almost missed by Excalibur.
Yeah.
Almost. There's a lot going on.
He caught at the very end. Like, I understand what you're saying, Casey, about the fact that, like, it allows visually for you to be able to see a little bit more what's happening in the ring, and it gives especially the luchadors the chance to hit some of those big spots, because, no offense, Rey Fénix, Commander, and Bandido have made a living over Tope Suicida,
yeah,
which would eliminate you from the match.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's one of those things where, like, okay, I get it. You know, it allows them to do stuff. Like you said, for Brian Cage and Swerve, it was more of kind of a smart heel move of like, yeah, let all these people fight and we'll come in and start to pick the bone. But it just made it hard at times because you're trying to focus in the ring and then you've got all of these side fights that are happening around the ring that the cameras are trying to cover. And it's just, it felt very ADD trying to watch this match.
Oh, 100%. I'm with you, and like I can see why they made the choices they did, and I think hopefully they will, going forward, make adjustments so that it's a bit cleaner the next time they do something like this.
So the ending was good with Cassidy and Swerve at the end,
yeah,
teasing eliminations and whatnot.
I like that it was kind of like a one-on-one match. Kind of like what they did with the Rumble this year, of like give them a few minutes to really kind of go,
because it now became a title match where you just had to throw your opponent over the top rope at the end. And Orange going for the Superman punch and then instead just kicks his hand off the apron or off the rope rather.
I loved that.
That was such a smart move.
That was creative.
Oh, so good.
Because usually you go for the big move and knock the opponent out. And he just went boop and knocked.
I like kicking the hand and you just see Swerve in slow motion reaching back for that top rope as he falls. Yeah. It was very much like a, you know, Hans Gruber, Die Hard kind of moment where it's like, no, but nothing he could do about it.
Yeah.
Very Wile E. Coyote of him.
Yeah. But for a second, they made you almost believe that Swerve could actually take it.
Yeah.
Which was good, because going into this match, I think all of us were like, I mean, I can tell you everyone, but two people. And one of them is an inanimate object, with Orange Cassidy.
Yeah.
Because the idea was, you're not going to take the belt off of him in the Battle Royal. Something's going to happen like pretty soon, because he's just banged up, where he'll drop. It'll be like Darby Allin with the TNT title, where he just can't continue, and someone takes advantage.
So Orange Cassidy still your international champion? Who will he challenge him next? We'll find out. Our next contest, which everyone thought was the opener because they kind of said it was the opener, then it came the Battle Royal. I was like, oh, okay. They I don't know.
They were sticking to the gimmick, okay?
Yeah. So they should. It was the unsanctioned match between Chris Jericho, the Ocho, taking on Adam Cole, baby, with special guest enforcer or referee or whatever. JR.
JR said referee a few times.
Yeah,
This is
where JR, Sabu, by the way, the homicidal, suicidal, genocidal Sabu. Get all his names out there. This is where JR started shouting about stupid, everyone having no idea what he meant.
He started yelling stupid. My question, and I'll ask this to Casey because I already asked this to Rock, special guest enforcers are supposed to be impartial, correct?
Theoretically,
they're brought in to essentially even the sides and make sure that there's no interference. In this case, he is absolutely, you know, taking a side. And no offense, kind of looking awful doing it.
It was not his best showing. But, I mean, Mike Tyson chose a side when he was a special enforcer.
Not until the very end, though.
No.
He was very much like D-Generation X side until the end of that match when he switched.
That's okay, yeah.
Because I will never, ever, ever get out of my head him going, "You hop wake?" like 16 times on a promo on Raw.
But to be fair, they set it up early on that he would be in the Enforcer. Nothing in the promo on Wednesday said he was the Enforcer until they showed a graphic that said he was in the Enforcer. So
yeah, oh, for sure. But, I mean, he did, I mean, if you kind of look at what he did in the ring, he did enforce fairness because, really, it was like all those members of the Jericho Appreciation Society and Roderick Strong.
And then the crazy old man jumped off, kind of just fell off the top rope through a table.
Yeah, yeah.
He listed lazily to the floor.
To be fair, if he had tried to set up a chair and do the leap over the top rope, I think we all would have been screaming, "No!" in unison.
Yes.
Because we have seen Sabu move recently and just, no, no. I've heard he's walking better right now, but no.
Well, it's because he's had some time to heal.
Yeah.
So, this match was underwhelming.
As an unsanctioned match, this was plain. You got the fire extinguisher spot. You got the...
Taz hated every moment of it because he was choking on the smoke.
Oh, yeah. He was just choking on the retardant.
Yeah, he was like, this is one the moment he regretted being at ringside.
You couldn't do too much with this, though, because you had the anarchy in the arena.
Yeah, that was the
problem.
Yeah.
Part of it is that, and part of it is one of your competitors has been out with a very serious head injury for a while, and you're putting him in a quote-unquote unsanctioned match. So I think purposefully a lot of these spots were done because it's like, we don't want to risk Adam.
Yeah. I mean, I was okay with everything that they did, though.
You got the Brit spot where she came in and hit Jericho with the kendo stick, and Saraya made the save, which then led to the tag match challenge for Wednesday later in the show, and where Jericho threw a fireball, because we're still throwing fireballs because Chris Jericho is, in fact, a wizard. And yep.
Can Jericho stick to a gimmick?
No.
I know he can't, and I know it's all about, you know, like, reinventing himself. But he's got, like, five gimmicks going on at the same time, because he's either going to break out the Painmaker, or the Wizard, or the Ocho, or the JAS, or I don't even know what else he does, or the Lion Tamer, or
Lionheart,
whatever.
Combine the last two and be the eighth Wizard.
Anyway, so they brought out this really long chain with handcuffs on it, and I think that was the worst part of this match.
Because they didn't know how to navigate with the chain.
They could not navigate the chain because the chain was too long. Every time they tried to use it.
They turned it into like a tech or what?
A strap match.
Part strap match, part four corner match. I don't know. But it's like, yeah, they wanted to turn it into, okay, he's doing this so Chris can't run from him. The only problem is the chain allows him to, like, go out into the sixth row by this point.
It was a big chain.
If he's in the corner.
Like, Jericho at one point tried to whip him with the chain, and just, there was no force behind it because there was so much chain, it didn't look like it did anything. And then there's Cole trying to wrap it around his knee to do the boom knee, and he's like, he's trying to get it to stay, but it's not staying, so he has to hold it as he awkwardly runs with it. Oh. And then it ends in just, him stay punching him and like, oh, referee stoppage. In an unsanctioned match, we're getting a referee stoppage.
That went over about as great as a wet fart in church. And you saw it a little bit here, but throughout the night, I hate to say this, AEW may need to reevaluate Las Vegas as a destination location because this crowd was dead.
It's not their best crowd.
Having an ending like the way this was did not help things.
No, it didn't.
Because, like, we saw a referee stoppage earlier in the weekend, and I think people still had a little bit of a problem with it, but it was pulled off better with the situation.
It would have been better if Adam Cole had, like, wrapped the chain around Jericho's neck and tossed him over the top rope and, like, hung on.
Yeah.
So then the referee would stop the match so that, like, you know, nobody died.
Or, to me, it would have been something along the lines of, so I know he dropped the boom with the chain assistance on the leg.
He was also trying to throw punches too, and it just he couldn't wrap it correctly because it was twisted around his leg.
But what I was going to say is, if he had done that another time or two, where it's like, boom, he hits Jericho with it, and Jericho goes down, and then he pulls Jericho back up and goes again and hits him with it, and he goes to do it a third time, and the referee is like, no, he is out of it. There's, I'm stopping it right now. That would have gone over better because it's more impactful. It's more like, okay, yeah, Cole is legitimately trying to end him, in a sense. With Cole just sitting there and kind of semi-raining punches down on Jericho, it's one of those kinds of things like when you see the referee stop a UFC fight early and you just go, what the hell? That's about what this was.
Yeah, it was, I don't know. It just felt weak.
Yeah, they could have done something different.
And they could have, even if he just did the right hands. But because he could, the stupid chain was twisted on his ankle, so he couldn't get like an actual fist of chain and just hammer fist down.
Even if he wrapped Jericho up in the chain and then started punching him to the point of like, Jericho literally can't do anything. And if Adam Cole just keeps punching him,
then that's something. That's his unable to defend himself. But it was like 30 seconds of boom, boom, boom. And it's like, oh, okay. And then in the promo, 45 minutes later, an hour later, he's all fine and everything. Like,
yeah, he could have like had a giant ice pack on his head.
Show some.
He got a black eye. Okay.
Show something with it, but yeah, I don't know.
Like, he's cutting the promo and like one of his kids is holding the ice pack on his head
because the family was there at ringside.
Yeah, they showed the family. I'm like, oh, Is his son gonna get beat? No.
No, nothing happened. They showed out their ringside and that was it. Nothing came of it. It's like,
I was low key disappointed that something didn't happen where like his son got involved in like beat down.
Yeah. Alright. Up next, the AEW tag team titles are on the line. FTR, Dax Harwood, and Cash Wheeler take on Team TNA, Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett with Sanjay Dutt, Sonam Singh, Karen Jarrett, all at ringside. Special referee Mark Briscoe with the camouflage referee shirt.
The camouflage stripes. I enjoyed that. It's very
that was
Briscoe.
Him. Yeah.
He was channeling his inner Bill Alfonso coming to the ring, calling it right down the middle, daddy.
The match drug on and on and on.
This was awful.
It went 20 minutes.
It was very busy.
Yeah.
The wrestling itself, I enjoyed the wrestling portions of this match very much. A lot of the stuff that happened around the wrestling, I could have done without.
It was a lot.
It was a lot.
The fact they've got the Entourage is bad. Because if it's just Sanjay Dutt is just extra enough to like add something. He does a good job being that smarmy heel manager.
Yeah.
He's kind of part Jimmy Hart, being, just loud and obnoxious and
doesn't
doing his
role. Doesn't need
the
megaphone to do so.
Yeah, he doesn't need the megaphone. He's got the pencil, but it's just, like, he does just enough where you're like, okay, yeah, I want to see him get his ass beat.
Yeah.
Satnam Singh is just there now to get ejected and swear on his way out.
I mean, I didn't mind that they didn't have him do anything in this match.
Well, yeah, he is kind of limited in what he can do. So.
Yeah, but like, I mean, as far like he got involved on Wednesday.
Yeah, after he got chucked through the tables.
Yeah, and he came back and he like laid a beat down, and that was fine.
Yeah,
the fact that they kind of like for this because of everything else that went on, that they just kind of like, hey man, just kind of come out here and stand around and do and be your large gigantic self. That's enough. Because they very easily could have put him in here, and it would have been even more of a cluster. So I'll give them props for that.
Yeah, no. Karen being there was the cluster.
Yeah.
So ref bump. Briscoe took the guitar shot and was out cold. So big rig, lethal on lethal. Dax got the
pin. No. Oh, no. I'm sorry. They called it the big rig this time. You're right.
They did, yeah.
Yeah. Had him down for the three where there's no referee. Out came Aubrey Edwards, who got stopped by Sanjay Dutt. And then Karen Jarrett slammed the guitar on Aubrey Edwards' head.
I'll admit I didn't see that coming. And when I did, I was like, oh! But also, it wasn't necessary.
I will say, in this instance, the Aubrey Edwards oversell works.
Was it needed?
As a referee, don't need it. In this instance, sure. it works well when she takes a guitar shot to the head. Was it needed? Oh, absolutely not.
No.
I mean, I guess if you want to look at it from a standpoint of, like, if you are a ref in the back and you want to think about coming out and trying to officiate this match, I would think twice because you're going to get hit, which then allows Mark Briscoe to, you know, do the final pinfall as opposed to, well, how come other referees aren't coming out? Well, it's simple because Karen Jarrett's going to beat them with a guitar or a chair.
I was going to say, the problem is you've seen that they used both guitars at that point. So.
Oh, yeah. There are plenty of it. Like, they could get stabbed with pencils.
Who knows? And there could be other guitars underneath the ring, you know?
Yeah.
The wrestling ring. Everything's under there.
Now, whether or not that was the idea behind it of, like, well, we hit this referee, so no other referees are going to come out to let Mark Briscoe finish the match, we'll never know.
We'll never know. We added too much logic to it. So Jeff almost had the win. We had the slow 1-2. Did not end up there. But then we had one more shatter, big rig machine.
After Jeff decided to put hands on Mark Briscoe and found out what happens.
You found out what happens. Yeah, so Dax and Cash, still your tag team champions. They all celebrated with Mark, gave him the belts to hold up for a second. He's like, no, I don't want any of this.
Ain't my thing, man.
My biggest complaint, it went 20 minutes. It had no need for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Cut 5 minutes, the match would have been a little bit better. And that's one of those things where AEW matches, they just go on a little too long. When they don't
need to. Well, this one, it was because they had to fit every little bit of overbooking in.
Yeah. All right. Up next, the ladder match for the TNT title. Wardlow, Christian Cage.
Overbooked as well.
I enjoy that Cage is leaning into that sleeveless turtleneck gimmick.
Yeah.
I saw the perfect...
It's so smarmy that, like, oh my, it works so well.
My favorite thing is I saw the meme where it was just like, it's almost like the past and the future where it's like Christian is wearing it currently, and then they put it right next to Ludwig Kaiser wearing the turtleneck as well.
Saw that.
It's just like, yeah.
For someone who's had as many injuries as Christian has had lately, especially with his neck and everything.
Neck, arm, everything.
Why is he still doing ladder matches where he's getting thrown right on top of them?
Why is he 50-something and competing in championship matches?
I don't know. The championship part. He's a legend. The championship's one thing. He doesn't need to be doing ladder matches anymore. It's like the same thing with Jeff. He doesn't need to do the spots. He's earned the right to just have simple wrestling matches and just sort of be healthy for the rest of his life. But going in there and falling through ladders and being dropped right on them, I feel bad for the guy.
I understand that. I go back to what I said earlier. When you make your reputation on that, it becomes the expectation. For Christian, it's, you're totally going to be the ladder match guy and do that thing where he, like, jumps off the top rope and face plants onto the guardrail. Because he does that a lot, too.
Yeah. Then we had, you know, Luchasaurus get involved, which then brought out Arn Anderson to get involved. Why is Arn Anderson getting involved?
He was hungry?
Boy, was he ever.
I have no clue what that spot was.
Please, someone explain to me what he was trying to do.
I think the idea was to, like, basically rip the meat of the finger off down to the bone is kind of what I thought they were trying to go for, but it did not work.
So, for those who didn't see, Arn Anderson starts biting the thumb of
Luchasaurus
for whatever...
Super Shredder.
For whatever reason, and his finger comes up bloody.
And Arn's face is just covered in it.
Covered in whatever blood capsule he opened up.
Yeah, he, like... Must have been a big blood capsule.
Because that was a lot of blood for whatever reason. I don't understand why. I don't understand the spot. I don't get it. I didn't understand it then.
That didn't make any sense.
And then what was Wardlow doing trying to leap onto a ladder?
To show that he is an athletic big guy.
It didn't work.
But unfortunately, when you're an athletic big guy and you're trying to jump onto a ladder like that, you can't jump with your feet together.
No.
Because... if you're using ladders that aren't made of fiberglass, much like the one that he tried to jump onto, that is not usually anything more than, like, aluminum, the ladder ain't gonna... You can't stick a landing with your feet together on a ladder. It's gonna collapse. just like it did. And they're very lucky that something worse didn't happen.
And then he tried to climb the same ladder.
That, oh, yeah.
And, like, I don't under...
Like, if they're going to do that, if they're going to do a spot like that, where you have a guy as big as he is to jump onto the ladder, they have to get, like, a heavier-duty ladder for that. Like, a fiberglass reinforced one that when you jump like that, it's not going to bend and break like that. Or he has to, like, land with his feet more apart so that he distributes the impact.
Mm-hmm. These guys are fighting like it's back with Hunter and, or I'm sorry, with Sean and Razor when they only had one ladder. And yeah. So it's like, we just need to make it work. No, no, if you look, like, with all of these matches, there are tons of ladders around. Just grab the next one.
Oh, and they did later when they did, he did the Swanton, I guess, on the Luchasaurus, but mainly the other table.
Yeah, when they set up the two tables, and it's like, okay, I think we know what's coming. And then he overshoots. It's like, well, he didn't get all of it there.
I mean, his lats got him, and he's got some pretty big lats. He's a big, meaty man.
His ponytail would have gotten him if he still had the ponytail.
Yeah, his lats and his big, thick neck got Luchasaurus enough that, you know,
it broke
both,
the
tables, both
broke.
Tables broke.
They did. He got enough of it.
So do we now get Luchasaurus and Wardlow?
Wardlow retained. No.
It just seems weird that it's like, of all the people that you would have seen in the match, it's kind of like, you would expect it would be Wardlow and Luchasaurus, because you would get what Keishi likes to affectionately call those kinds of things.
Big meaty lizard smacking meat.
Exactly. You would have had that and Wardlow just going to town on one another, and I think everyone would have been there for that, because they're two very big athletic guys. And yeah. Instead, we got Wardlow facing a 50-year-old in a ladder match where, as Rock said, should not be in a ladder match. And it just... And then you've got 79-year-old Arn Anderson involved for some reason. The only thing he didn't do was pull out his Glock.
Which they reference on the pre-show.
Yeah, RJ said he's like, are you going to come out strapped? What?
I was waiting for it.
Something. I don't know anymore. I really don't. Anyway, still TNT champion Wardlow. We'll see where he goes next. So, out of all the matches that needed to be overbooked, it was this next one, because this one legitimately had needed bells and whistles just to get around it, just so it could happen.
That's very true.
It was the AEW Women's Championship on the line, Jamie Hayter defending against Toni Storm. Jamie Hayter came into this match injured. We all knew this. They were very clear that she was injured. By the way, JR is gone at this point, thankfully.
Giovanni showed up.
Yep. Then he said, this is the first time at ringside. And then he had to be corrected. No, it was at Fighter Fest or Fight for the Fallen, whatever it was, in 2019. He goes, I wasn't there, so it didn't count. So they play her music. She didn't come out. She came out the second time because she was taken to ringside by Saraya and Ruby Soho. Because she was jumped in the back. They did everything they could. They had Britt show up. They had Hikaru Shida showed up to run interference in this matchup so we could at least have some sort of semblance of order with controlling Ruby and Saraya. Jamie got it through. You could see the bruise on her arm. Whatever is injured, it's not good. So she got through it. She gutted through it. Looked like a couple times maybe she would retain the belt. But Toni Storm got the win, is now the AEW Women's Champion.
But then then Jamie Hayter threw herself into an exposed turnbuckle.
Yeah, she just...
The end of this, like, it started off really good.
Yeah.
And then the end got super clunky.
Well, my favorite part about the fact of, like, she kind of took herself to the corner was that it wasn't a straight shot to the corner.
No, she started going, and then a 45-degree angle wind came in and changed her trajectory.
Yeah.
It was
that. If it wasn't for that, this would have been perfect. And I don't know if it's because Toni threw her the wrong way or there was a miscommunication of when something was supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. Clearly, there was some sort of miscommunication on some part, and Jamie realized what happened and decided to change mid-run, but it didn't look good.
No, it didn't. So, Jamie proved to be the warrior that she is. She gutted it out. Unlike the previous women's champion who could not compete to drop the title, Toni Storm is now officially an AEW Women's Champion. Not that she wasn't before when she was interim champion. And then after
and then
she lost
recognized.
It, she was later recognized after they took away the interim title portion. Now she can officially be AEW Women's Champion. It sucks for Jamie because she wants to be it all in as champion. Hopefully she's healthy enough to work that show. And then Brent can get his rematch of this match.
I don't want this again.
I mean, I'm sorry. We didn't get this. We didn't get it here, though.
I know, but this doesn't need to be the feud that continues. Like,
but, I mean, at least you could sell it as a rubber match.
I guess, but it's just, like, I get it. They were former roommates. They, you know, there's history there. But this doesn't have blood feud like other, you know, prolonged feuds that we've seen. This isn't Kevin and Sammy. This isn't Johnny and Tommaso. This isn't Adam and Kenny, you know, if we're going to use the AEW versions. Like, I don't need to see Jamie Hayter versus Toni Storm again. I know that we probably will at some point, but...
Maybe.
Well, and also, of all the people in the Outcast that you'd think would have that title, Tony's not the one that I would think. Maybe that could lead to something, but I mean, I guess Tony is probably the most reliable worker out of it, not taking anything from Ruby, but like Saraya having the title is one thing just because she's the leader, but at the same time, for consistent title defenses, I don't know if Saraya is quite the one you'd want.
No, she isn't at this stage of her career, no.
She would be an MJF-style champion, essentially.
Once a month. I think a little bit more than MJF. She can go at least once a month, as she's put out there in the media. Which we'll see on Wednesday, her match of the month.
Yeah.
Alright, it's open rules for the AEW Trios titles. House of Black, open challenge.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise, it's the Acclaim and Daddy Ass Billy Gunn. And the line everyone was talking about, Brent, was...
Oh, just what we need, a cuckold reference in 2023.
So what was the line?
I can't remember the actual line.
You can't remember the actual line?
Hang on, give me a minute.
The actual line is basically about being, Buddy is being cucked by a kid named Dominic.
I thought it was funny.
It was funny. It really was funny.
I enjoy listening to the lyrical stylings of one Platinum Max caster.
Buddy's response on Twitter was like they got put over on, or now they're being put over on two shows. Then we had the match. It was okay. Bowens and Black early on was fine. Them doing the sit down in the ring. Also in his rap, there was something about blackface too. We're just going to move past
which we'll see later.
There was a line about blackface, and then there was also another line about like being called the House of Black when there aren't any actual black people in
it. Yeah,
which is pretty smart.
Match was fine. House of Black retained.
Daddy Ass ate the pin like we all probably thought he would.
Yeah, I don't know. It was all right.
Yeah, I mean, it was like kind of. It was kind of what I expected it to be.
Also, was not a. Need it for the pay-per-view, though.
No, this was a Dynamite match that they threw on there.
Because you wanted to get House of Black and the Acclaim on the show.
This was probably, theoretically, a cool-off match.
I thought that was the next match.
No, it was probably also added to fill time because they knew the women's title match was going to
be
short. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So, I mean, as far as, like, the order, I thought this was in a good spot.
Yeah, it was fine. It was midway through. Yeah. It was fine.
Yeah.
It was sort of like an intermission type. If you needed to get up, you can get up during this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all the people who love the Acclaim can stay and watch, and everybody else who needs a break can go take one.
Yeah. Speaking of, but if you have Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming. You can support the channel and have an ad-free experience by clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen. You can also use credit card RockStock in the Fortnite item shop because hashtag... Epic partner. Jade Cargill, Taya Valkyrie, TBS title on the line. Cargill had her sorority sisters out there. They danced a bunch.
She had an entrance.
She came off like the baby face in the entrance when she was supposed to be the heel, but here we be. The match was...
Husband Brandon Phillips was in the crowd.
Yeah, match was fine. Jade retained. It was fine.
I'm trying to figure out what they were doing on the one spot off the ropes.
I don't know.
When Jade did the bounce, when she came flying over and Taya, I think, was trying to hit a code breaker.
Yes.
But it just kind of...
It ended up just kind
colliding.
Of being... I think she was trying to hit, yeah, like a code breaker or a lung blower, which is something that I believe she does on the regular basis. And I think just the timing was a bit off, so it was more of like an ab blower. Which, I mean, if someone's jumping in the air and then you like give them double knees into their diaphragm, like it's gonna cause some problems.
Yeah, it's gonna be impactful. It just kind of looked weird in the moment.
Yeah. I think just the timing was a bit off. I think Taya just didn't jump quite as soon as she needed to in order to hit Jade where she was supposed to.
So that's not where the story is. Jade Cargill retained the title. She's 60-0 and it's beating them all. And she's willing to defend her title anytime, any place. But the thing is,
God damn it, Mark.
There's nobody left.
Damn it, Mark. Why did you say those words?
Because out came Chris Statlander.
Yay!
Ready, willing, and able to fight for the championship. She comes out, they have a quick little fight, and Chris Statlander is your new TBS champion to put the one in 60-1.
She did her best Hulk Hogan impression. That was the Mania 9 spot!
Well, except Taya would have had to have lost the title.
True. But
but yes, I understand the parallels there for sure.
Brother, she came down and got the title.
Yeah, I was happy to see her.
The whole story has been that Chris was going to be the one to take down Jade.
Mm-hmm.
Are we surprised that it happened here? Sure, because I think a lot of us were like, Chris still has a little bit of time on those knees to heal, right?
Yeah.
No, she's back.
I mean, it was kind of cool that they gave her that moment. Which is, I think, why they did it the way they did.
The show needed that moment.
Yeah, it needed a surprise. It needed a genuine, like, we didn't see this coming moment.
Yeah, for sure.
And honestly, as we've talked about a little bit between, you know, a couple of pay-per-views and... We can call it pay-per-view, right?
This is a pay-per-view, yes.
Okay, just making sure.
I paid per view.
But, you know, we've talked about it on a couple of pay-per-views. Rock and I talked about it on the preview... The night before, the TBS title needed a change. You needed to do something different with Jade.
Yeah.
Because, sure, you had 60-0. That's great. She ran through a lot of people. She beat, you know, one or two, I would say, notable people during her run. The rest of them were, no offense to, like, Sky Blue or Kiera Hogan or, you know, any of those others that came along the way. It's kind of the Goldberg streak where you're just like, all of a sudden it got up to, you know, 50, 60 range and you were like, wait, who did she fight? When were some of these matches? But you needed to get the belt off of Jade, number one, to give her a new direction. And from what I understand, she's taking time off. And if she, you know, when she comes back, there's probably going to be a bit of a change to her.
Well, that's good.
Which, yeah, she kind of needs a little bit of reinvigoration.
Yeah.
But two, it now opens up that division a bit more to have some changes, to try and elevate some of those girls that aren't ready for the women's world title to get a little bit of shine. Because when Britt and Jade had the belts, it was pretty much like, okay, some people are going to get their shot at the title, but we know who's going to hold on to it. It's, you know, there was essentially the female glass ceiling that was there. And you've had some change in the women's world title, but I think when you look at that division also, you kind of go, there's not really a lot of people working on that top rank.
Yeah.
So you needed to develop that mid-card for them, and I'm sorry, this is a secondary title belt. This gives them a chance to kind of give some of those people in that second level a chance to really shine and to actually get spotlight for a bit.
Especially with the second major TV show on the horizon.
Yes.
I think it'll be good.
All right, time for our double main event, which is, you know, everyone crapped on WWE for doing double main events and triple main events, but here we are, our double main event for the World Heavyweight title. MJF, Darby Allin, Jack Perry, Sammy Guevara. Sammy comes out with Tay Mello, brings out the signs, reveals they're having a child.
Does that mean they're no longer part of the Jericho Appreciation Society?
They didn't have any of the visuals. It was just Sammy with the anime behind him, so...
And it's been like that for a while, so, like... But there's no, like, official...
Split.
Yeah.
They've done that before.
It just kind of happened.
Yeah.
And then he always ends up back in the group anyhow, so we'll see. We'll see Wednesday.
It depends if the fans want to shit on him. Recently, he's been playing the face, which, by the way, as we talked about in the preview of this match, who are the heels and who are the faces? Don't know.
Yeah.
So ultimately,
Sammy came out with a birth announcement, and it's like, well, shit, we can't boo him.
Well, and the way they worked the match kind of indicated that, like, MJF was the only heel.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that, especially being that it's MJF that's the only heel.
A little parry at the end, but not fully.
We'll get to that. Then we had Darby Allin and then the Elvis wedding.
Where he beat the guy, I don't know what that was.
Where he beat the guy wearing an MJF mask and then asked the Elvis impersonator to help him dispose of the body.
Slash officiant.
Yeah. He said the impersonator said it wouldn't be his first time. They put the body in the car and then they drove off.
Well, I mean, it is Vegas.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Then Darby does his entrance and Shivani goes, he's the most serious man out of them all in this matchup right now as he's walking to the ring in an Elvis jumpsuit.
Well, first he skated to the ring.
Yeah. He skated down a ramp.
But he's the most serious with an Elvis jumpsuit.
The most focused.
Oh, God.
MJF was channeling his best Bad News Barrett / Bobby Lashley / Bobby Roode for his entrance.
No, you're 100% wrong.
Okay.
That was the Hunter Mania entrance, including the people fanning him.
I was
going
like
to
say, like, the throne.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was the Hunter one from when Charlotte and Sasha and Alexa were the girls and stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
That was the entrance.
That's what I got from it.
I don't know. I didn't compare him to Bobby or anything like that. No,
I was going the scissor lift that he had.
No, this was
or not scissor lift. The elevated throne he had.
No, this was more of them coming down with it. Yeah, this was the Hunter entrance.
Okay, fine.
With his harem of MJF ladies.
Mm-hmm. This was.
Well, I mean, he is better than us, and we know it.
Exactly. Yeah. This was the best wrestling match on the show.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
This was.
They all came out to try and prove that they are, as the feud said going into this, the future of AEW.
They worked hard. They gave a lot of near falls, a lot of enough high spots to really sell this match. And I think we lost count, Brent, of the what the fucks.
Yeah, MJF. Like,
oh, that reminds me of something. Keep going.
So, I understand that, like, AEW wants to be edgy. You know, they've got the scissors, they've got the fingers, they've got, you know, some of the stuff that they say on TV. MJF takes it to a different level on pay-per-view. Because there were at least three times that it was the, what the fuck?
What was
the move. Yeah, well, you're a fucking idiot.
Oh, boy.
The one with him and Darby where he lets out the what the fuck and then takes the move, like, because Darby's just spinning all around him. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, when Darby does that kind of, like, flip over stunner sliced bread, and he's in the air, and you just hear MJF shouting audibly on the on the microphone for camera, what the fuck? Wham! It's like, oh.
I didn't have anything wrong with it. It was because it's MJF, but it's like, what the fuck are we watching?
Yeah.
And then there's a point where he, midway through, he grabs the mic and tells Sammy to lay down and think about the baby. And Sammy lays
down.
That was a good spot.
Great.
And then he lays down for it.
Okay,
I'll take
it. And
I
knew it was coming, but I was excited to see it.
And then he tricked him with the small package for it too. Then everyone hit their move from their teacher. Allin hit the scorpion, MJF.
The scorpion death drop. Yeah. The kill switch or unprettier.
Mm-hmm.
It was the lion tamer / the code breaker, and then MJF breaks out the crossroads.
His eyes started to bug out when he first did it, because you knew
he got him ready for it, and it was just, oh, this is happening.
It's going down right now. Boom.
And I will say, Jack Perry sells the hell out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because he spun him around and just Perry was a complete perpendicular to that mat. Just planted his head.
Yeah.
Then we had the four-way submission.
That was kind of cool, except what I really wish had happened. So I wanted the referee to go around, but there were two people with shoulders on the mat. And I wanted the referee to just like, one, two, and someone just like lifts a shoulder. I thought that could have added a little bit of something because, yeah, it would have been like, oh, wait, there's submissions and possibly a quick pin here involved.
Yeah, that would have been good.
So before we continue on, because he brought up the cursing, what did that bring up for you, Keish?
After FTR saved Ricky Starks from being beat down by the Bullet Club,
mm-hmm.
right at the very end of that clip as Cash was walking away, he dropped an F-bomb. It was the first one of the night, and I was just like, oh!
Oh, and I brought up to Rock, if you listen, every time Satnam Singh gets ejected,
yeah,
he goes, what the fuck? And I've heard it on Dynamite, and I just go, okay? I mean, it may be something else. It could be like I just mishear it, but it always sounds like he goes, what the fuck?
Yeah. I mean, I did not expect so many like clearly audible F-bombs dropped on this.
Billy told one of them House of Black, fuck you, and just did the Famaster.
Yeah, like so many
mm-hmm.
audible F-bombs on this show. It was wild.
Yeah. Sammy's Spanish Fly down onto Darby and Jack.
Jack. Yeah.
He used the Spanish Fly on MJF and hit everyone. That was a good move. Then there was the scary spot where he did... Oh, wait, no, before we get to the scary spot. Okay, the Canadian Destroyer, Code Red, whatever you want to call it. How many did we get in this match?
About as many as we got super kicks in the next match.
Yeah, there were a lot.
So, like, yeah, it is...
I remember when that move was the impactful finisher. It's like, that got hit and no one. There was like one or two people that would deliver that move. And when it got hit, it was over. You can walk home because the match was done. Now it's transitions.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Well, that's what happens when a move is super cool.
This is valid.
The way Casey said that, I love it. What happens.
Petey's retired now.
Yeah.
And yet everyone else can do his move. So... MJF does the Candido powerbomb from the top rope.
Yep.
Ooh. Ooh, his wrist. Ooh. That didn't look good.
No.
Apparently nothing's broken.
He probably just jammed it.
Yeah, but ooh, it looked nasty for a minute. Because he wasn't moving for a minute with it.
Yeah.
But he got it through towards the end with it. Did the decision making from Jack Perry where he had to decide, what do I do with this belt that's just in my hands?
Perry really has that in every feud, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Because there was the spot with the Elite, with Adam Cole and Red Dragon where it's like, do I use the chair? I don't know. No. And then it comes back to bite him. And then, you know, against Christian, do I use the chair here? No. Until finally he does. I guess he just plays conflicted babyface.
It's the way it seems. Something's going to push him over the edge.
When he finally is able to grow a full face beard.
No, he's going to grow that mustache beard combination. That's when he's going to go, you know, like evil Jack Perry.
Yes.
It's not the full beard. It's just that little bit.
Oh, like a goatee?
Yes. He'll go just that simple goatee and maybe he'll like cut his hair or like pull it back in and work in a ponytail just to show the transition.
Well, but he's got to keep those sideburns too.
Well, you can keep the sideburns. You just have to like either like straighten the hair and put it in a ponytail or like I said, just cut the hair, but keep the sideburns.
There is also a spot everyone got to do. They got rid of MJF and everyone did a roll up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's fine.
Some nice callbacks to the headlock takeover.
We did get the callback to the headlock takeover a couple times. So everyone got close near falls at the end. Darby was going to go for the coffin drop. But
that was such a smart use of the belt.
Yeah. So after...
that's one of those things where, yeah, MJF has a really, like, I'll give him credit. He works very good. Cerebrally in a match.
Yeah.
So it was like this little touch that he does here is beautiful.
So after the fighting over whether what to do with the belt's still in the ring. So MJF knows exactly what to do with the belt. So he throws it on top of
Perry.
On Jack Perry, because Sammy got pushed off the top rope at one point when he was going to go up for the 450 again or whatever he was going to end up doing. So he drops the coffin drop onto the belt, which was on top of Jack Perry. MJF covers a knocked out Darby Allin after he hit him with a headlock takeover for the 1-2-3 to retain his title. Really good match.
Yeah.
Very good.
I wouldn't mind seeing more of the individuals, like singles matches coming out of this.
Yep.
All of them working together. I don't know if I need, you know, a 3-man or 4-man of this group anymore, but having the individuals go, like another Perry MJF match, because we saw one before and it was very good.
Yeah.
If we want to see, you know, like Guevara MJF or, you know, again, Darby MJF, just because they all put on a good show, they know how to work together, and they're going to give you everything, which is nice to see.
Yeah.
Then it's your main event, because shit's about to hit the fan. That's a
no,
quote.
No, that was the first hour.
No, that was a quote, though.
I know that's how he introduces Anarchy in the Arena, but I'm saying the shit hit the fan in hour one.
Yeah, it is Anarchy in the Arena. Anything goes. Blood everywhere. It's the Elite, Kenny Omega, Hangman, Adam Page, Matt and Nick Jackson, the Young Bucks, taking on the Blackpool Combat Club of Jon Moxley, Brian Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta. Anarchy in the Arena. The table got destroyed 2 minutes in. No one knew what to do, the announcers-wise. We had a musical entrance for the Blackpool Combat Club, and the music just continued. Wild Thing playing over and over again. The crowd loved it in the arena, because wasn't that a callback to where they stopped the music one time?
So the first Anarchy in the Arena with Moxley and Wild Thing played, I want to say twice all the way through, and then it stopped.
And everyone booed. And,
yeah, everyone booed. And this time it was going to keep going. But it got stopped another way, which is fine, because that was the fun part.
I was very sports entertained with this match.
It was very sports entertained, very hard to keep up with it, because at home watching it, oh my God, the camera shots of the cuts, they had no idea.
The director did a really bad job of cutting from one spot to another to catch the moves.
Yeah.
Because it's like you would get ready to see this big impactful move, and it would cut to like Claudio and Matt in the back. And then when it cuts back, all of a sudden you see like Kenny Omega sitting on a poker chip covered in barbed wire, but you have no clue how it got there. And all of a sudden Taz has to throw it to the replay. To be like, how did this happen? Oh, there it is.
It was a lot to keep up with. And if you had the referee being the first one to bleed in the first 5 minutes, then you win bingo. Because, oh my God, why did the referee need to bleed? I don't know. Reasons.
DraftKings did have no idea, chat.
But if you bet on DraftKings, then use the...
I hope they parlayed.
Parlayed. If you had the referee bleeding first, maybe that was a question they asked on the DraftKings app. Who knows? I don't think they asked who would bleed first. If they did, tremendous. I was worried going into this about Bryan Danielson, because he hasn't done anything since February or March, whenever Revolution was.
March.
Beginning of March, I think.
Yeah, it was beginning of March.
He didn't do a lot of bumping. He did enough.
Yep.
But this was a massive brawl around the building. We had, I mentioned, barbed wire on a poker chip. We had a pile driver on to a back of a pickup truck. Lots of blood. For some reason, a leaf blower.
Yeah, that was weird.
Look, you know, sometimes you got to do some landscaping outside of the arena. And so, you know, they've got leaf blowers there. Sometimes it helps maybe clean up the arena. After, you know, everyone's got their concessions there, you just kind of fold up the chairs and use the leaf blower to get all of that trash to one side.
They use the leaf blower to get all the confetti out of the ring after Statlander won the title.
Or typically when the Young Bucks enter the rampway.
They didn't have that this time. Because ever since they switched to the Kansas song, they don't do any streamers or money or confetti. So they legitimately probably used that leaf blower to clear the ring after Statlander won, and whoever was pulling shit out from under the ring was like, oh, this will be fun.
This will work.
This will do, Chief.
So I think it was Nick who got the pile driver in the back of the truck?
Matt.
No, that was Matt.
Matt. Mutton chops, that's right. That's how Jobber always reminds me who's who. Matt has the mutton chops. So Matt took the pile driver and he disappeared, and I love that the announcers were like, oh yeah, we haven't seen Matt in a long time. Here comes Matt down the ramp.
Right on cue.
My question is, what the fuck happened when he got to the ring?
He had a pyro shoe.
Oh, yes, he did.
He put a blasting cap on his Spider-Man Jordans. And what
he threw? This...
What is this? Like it was like a supersized super kick.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which should have been a finish.
Well,
yeah,
yeah.
If you have an exploding super kick, why is it in the middle of the match? Like when he had the shoe that was covered in thumbtacks and he hit the super kick in the cage match with the Lucha Brothers. Why wasn't that the finish?
Because
it's not a Meltzer driver.
There you go. So he hit the super kick with the pyro,
which was also like a bigger explosion than the exploding
death match. Finally, it took 3 years later they got the pyro to work. Then Claudio.
I mean, when that happened, I popped pretty big. I was like, oh, I thought it was cool.
It was cool. I liked the spot. Then Claudio booted Matt Chu into the crowd. I don't know if that was the smartest idea because it's the one that was loaded with the pyro. So
he got it back.
Did they?
Yeah, he showed a picture of the aftermath of what the shoe looked like like on Twitter.
Okay, but it was not the smartest idea to kick it into the crowd. And I don't think he meant to kick it in the crowd. I think when he punted it towards the ramp, it just curved.
Yeah,
could have just thrown it outside. But here we are.
Yeah, but punting it is way more hilarious.
I guess. Then,
I mean, it's not a baby, though, so it's not as funny.
It wasn't his fault.
Thank you, Rock.
You're welcome. Then poor Matt,
who no longer
had a shoe, got his foot with sock taken off, put into the pile of thumbtacks, and the thumbtacks were sticking into his heel. Think about that, everybody. Thumbtacks sticking into the bottom of your heel, of your foot.
No, thank you.
And then you can walk on it.
Yeah.
For another 5 to 7 to 10 minutes.
That's impressive, but also, like, the opposite.
Why? Who thought this was a good idea?
I mean, I can't talk that much. I do an improv game where we do a scene barefoot and blindfolded with Lego and mousetraps on the stage.
That's not smart either.
No, but at least things don't, like, most of the time impale my foot.
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
He says most of the time.
I like the caveat.
Well, I mean, nothing's actually ever, like, the bottom of my feet, the skin on the bottom of my feet have never broken skin. My legs, however...
So you're saying it's never been penetrated?
Not my feet, no.
Okay. I'm just, yeah. Anyway, so in 2010, Bryan Danielson was fired from World Wrestling Entertainment for choking Justin Roberts with his tie. In 2023, we're calling back to the spot again because he went after Justin Roberts and took his belt and tie or something, or jacket, and they have to go, he has PTSD. War flashbacks of it. Do we really need that call back? It's so long ago. No one cares, but they have to. Anyway.
I would have enjoyed it better if, like, Justin Roberts got to choke Danielson with his tie.
That would. There you would be your callback. There's your revenge.
Yeah.
But not to be.
Because, I mean, and that would have worked out pretty well in this match if, like, one of the Elite had, like, drug him over there and be like, take your tie off. It's your turn. And Roberts is like, okay.
That would have been clever. So, comes down to the end. Don Callis gets up. We have a V-trigger on Wheeler Yuta. He's setting up for the finish. Callis is in the ring. Omega goes face-to-face with Callis. Man dressed in black with a red hat on gets into the ring. The masked man hits Omega with a knee to the head.
Takeshita.
I don't know why I thought Takashi. Came in the ring, dropped him, lift and laying. Yuta hit the screwdriver, hit him with it in the face, an actual screwdriver. and got the win.
Puts him in the seatbelt.
Blackpool Combat Club win. Takeshka. Is he back Blackpool Combat Club now?
He could be.
I think him and Callis are Blackpool adjacent. I don't think they're officially Blackpool Combat Club.
But this was
I could see Takeshka joining and not Callis.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is Callis has transitioned to the young lion from the old lion.
Yeah, well, and I mean, Callis needed someone to do his, like, physical dirty work for him, so it's good that they gave him a wrestler.
So, that was the pay-per-view. Bloody, bloody mess at the end. Overbooked overall. I think that's the best way to describe this show.
I also thought that the one cameraman in the corner that had, like, the gloves and the mask and the black hat.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, there were a couple times where I'm like, oh, is he a wrestler? Is he a wrestler? And there were a couple times he, like, took his camera off and put it down on the apron to quote unquote get like a closer shot. And I was like, is he putting the camera down? Oh no, he's just getting a better shot.
Apparently that's just a normal thing. Because other people saw that and like, oh no, that's just a normal guy.
Yeah.
So Brent,
mm-hmm.
Housekeeping.
Okay, so in our recap here, we had 5 people compete. In 5th place at 4 and 6, we have the wheel. I mean, It had Juice Robinson winning the Battle Royal. Can we?
Yeah.
I will say this. It is the only one to pick the Blackpool Combat Club to win Anarchy in the Arena. Everyone else picked the Elite. We all didn't think that they were going to send the fans home slightly agitated with that. But also, it was the only one to pick Christian Cage to win the ladder match. So, can we really trust the wheel?
You win some, you lose some.
Yep. Tied for 3rd place. We have Team WTR, myself and Keishi, at 7 and 3.
Yay.
We all, Keishi, you and myself, got the same 3 matches wrong.
Of course we did.
We got Jamie Hayter wrong, Taya Valkyrie, and the Elite. And coming in 1st place, we have the producer, Sir Rockin, and our AEW expert for this network, one Lindsay Ward of the Rack.
At what?
At 8 and 2.
Impressive.
So Lindsay Ward upholds her title as being the AEW expert of WTR.
I acknowledge you, Lindsay.
She's been expert since day one.
Down with it. We'll clip that and we'll play that Thursday on the Rack.
Oh my god, she's gonna kill us.
I had nothing to do with that one. Anyway, that'll do it for CP Radio Not So Live. Live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. We will be back maybe for Forbidden Door. I don't know. Maybe.
When is Forbidden Door?
In a month.
Yeah, June. In Canada.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that up.
Maybe we'll come back and talk about it.
We don't know who's going to be healthy for it. We really don't think there are going to be any Latin superstars at the show, but we'll find out.
We'll find out. For live program this week, Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, it's the Rack. We'll review Night of Champions. Saturday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, it's Fortnite with Friends, followed by CB Radio Live at 11:30 p.m. Eastern. The normal show, all of those things, the Intern's Corner, we'll have the Great and the Great Debate. GreatAndGreatDebate.com. Sunday is WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio, where Keishi and the intern will discuss wrestling with Tim Stein and we'll figure out what they're doing. Plus, on Sunday, we'll reveal who won this past season of WTR Fantasy. Saturday, we'll do the same for the TV radio version, which means the following weekend will be Fantasy Draft Weekend.
Ooh.
Mark it in your calendars. I think that's the 10th and 11th. Something like that. Yeah, 10th and 11th Fantasy Drafts on CB Radio and WTR Sunday night. So, lock it in. Next Monday night, Raw Post Show, normal time, 11 p.m. Eastern. It's at Wild Talk Radio on Twitter. It's facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio Network. As always, chat, if you have that Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming. Support the channel by clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen. You can also use credit code Rocket Talk in the Fortnite item shop. Hashtag Epic Partner. Keishi's all over the social medias. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Kyle Driver. I mostly post about wrestling in the province of Alberta, and that's mostly it. I got a Redbubble store in case you want to seek out merch. Put my logo on a coaster and then put your cool or hot beverage on said coaster and many, many other things. Yeah, you can check that out. The link to that is in the descriptions of both of those social medias.
The intern's on Twitter as well.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Kane Kittens. May other things be coming soon? Who knows? We'll have to find out. But you can at least find my diatribes, critiques on Twitter at Kane Kittens. I'm not making as many friends as Rock is, but I do make friends there.
Calling a show overbooked means you're a WWE fan. And I'm just going to shit all over it. Yep. It's been Cebrio Not So Live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Maybe we'll be back for Forbidden Door, but we'll definitely be back for All In, whatever it's called, at the end of the summer. The three of us to talk about it. But we'll see you all week long. Along there is the Wild Talk Radio Network.